Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. When you go into a grocery store or a general store, there are probably a bunch of different milk options to choose from. Whole, 2%, skim, chocolate, local, grass-fed, store brand, or a glass bottle from the dairy down the road. Most, if not all, of these options are pasteurized. That means the milk has gone through a process to rid it of bacteria. But many people prefer their milk unpasteurized or raw. According to the research firm Nielsen IQ, raw milk sales rose more than 20% last May compared to the year before. It has some prominent boosters, including the country's new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This despite warnings from the CDC and FDA about raw milk potentially carrying E. coli and avian flu. Today on the show, we're going to take a look at Vermont's raw milk market. Later in the hour, we'll hear from a dairy farmer in southern Vermont who sells it. But first, we are joined by E.B. Flory. She's the Division Director of Food Safety for the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. E.B., welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're also joined in the studio today by Andrea Etter. She's an assistant professor at the University of Vermont in Burlington, and her areas of expertise include food microbiology, food safety, and the biosecurity of backyard poultry. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Andrea, let's start with some basic definitions of terms here. What exactly is raw milk? Is it the same thing as unpasteurized milk?
Yeah, essentially. I don't think there's really a difference between the two. So pasteurized milk is going to be heated. There's a lot of different time and temperature combinations. The idea is to kill anything that could potentially make you sick. Raw milk is not heat treated. Most of the time, people will filter it. I grew up on a homestead. You know, we'd milk the goat and then we'd filter it through a paper or fabric filter and then we'd refrigerate it and drink it.
For somebody who hasn't drinking raw milk before, can you describe what it tastes like or the difference between that and maybe a big gallon of milk you'd buy in Hannaford or Shaw's?
So it's very different. We had goats and obviously goat milk is going to be very different than cow milk. Goat milk, it's really an issue of freshness. The stuff you buy in the store tends to have a stronger flavor. I have had cow milk. So one of the things with unpasteurized cow milk is if you don't have a homogenizer, it's going to have little chunks of fat in it. And I always found that kind of gross. But some people really like that, the cream top, and will eat the cream and whatever. Mm. Otherwise, I think it's reasonably similar, but it's definitely an adjustment period if you go from drinking raw milk to store milk or vice versa.
Mm. EB, are you a raw milk aficionado? How do you feel about it in your personal life outside of work?
Outside of work. Well, I would definitely say I'm a dairy aficionado just in general. My background, I grew up on a dairy farm, and I did grow up drinking our farm's raw milk. I no longer drink raw milk, and I haven't since I left the farm. And there is a difference between drinking that raw milk and then having pasteurized milk. And I think a big thing, and this is part of what we have in our statutes in Vermont allowing the consumption of raw milk and the sales of raw milk, I think a big thing is knowing the farm and knowing what goes into the animals, the harvesting, the sanitation practices, and the cooling and handling, because there are risks that are associated with the milk, and so those pieces and that safety factor that can go into it. Pasteurization and even like having that technology, there's a reason why it was discovered and invented. And it was because there were pathogens and other things in milk and other products that were making people ill and killing people. And I'm not trying to be extreme, but there are pathogens that can be found in raw milk that can make people ill. And that's why a large majority of our milk is pasteurized for people to consume.
Mm. Yeah, and just to be clear, I am also not a raw milk aficionado at this time. You know, and once you start studying food safety and microbiology, it's you can't look at raw milk the same way.
I bet. You know too much.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to understand a little bit more about the process of pasteurization before we get into the specifics of Vermont and the raw milk regulations that we have here. Could you describe for us, Andrea, in a bit more detail how it works to pasteurize milk?
So EB might be the better person. Sure. There's like a million different combinations, and I don't remember them off the top of my head.
EB, yeah. Go for it.
So really a basic summary of pasteurization is heating each molecule of milk to a set temperature for a specific amount of time that will have a certain log reduction to remove all of the pathogens. So depending on fat content and also for the chocolate milk consumers of the world and ice cream consumers, when you have added sugars or higher fat contents, love butter fat, you have to increase the temperature and with the pasteurization. So pasteurization is just making sure that every molecule of the milk is heated to a specific temperature for a certain amount of time that has been found that will eliminate these pathogens. So that's what pasteurization does. Depending on the type of pasteurization you're doing, it can be at a lower temperature for a longer amount of time, or it can be at a higher temperature for a shorter amount of time. So there is a range that industries can use for those products. Mm.
If you have questions about raw unpasteurized milk and safety concerns around it, you can call in at 800-639-2211. We got an email from a listener named Will in Starksboro who writes, "Raw milk is a fundamental food source, and in natural and clean circumstances, I consider it safe to consume. I wouldn't buy it in a big grocery as I would immediately be curious about its sanitary handling so many steps from the cow. When I get raw milk, it's at a farm from those who tend the cows. The quote-unquote right to raw milk depends on the product itself, fresh milk straight from the cow being what it is supposed to be." EB, I'm curious for your thoughts there on Will's comment about raw milk potentially becoming less safe the farther away you get from the farm.
Yeah, I appreciate Will's thoughts, and I feel like he's very informed. And one of the things with raw milk is that it does not have the same shelf life as pasteurized milk. And so, you know, Will's statements, you know, as it gets further removed from the farm, it's not going to last as long, it's going to spoil. So just that in and of itself, like the further it's removed from the farm. In Vermont, raw milk can't be sold by the farm after 4 days from harvesting. So it is a very quick shelf life. And so, you know, it sounds like for Will, he knows his farmer and who he's getting his milk from. And it sounds like he agrees with their farming practices and he's done his research, and good for him. Mm. Yeah.
And Andrew, you understand the biology, the microbiology, yeah, of what's going on with milk as it sits on the shelf for longer and longer. What's the reasoning behind having like a 4 day or so shelf life?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons. One is fundamentally, milk is not sterile when it comes out of the cow. Theoretically, inside the udder, it could be sterile, but pathogens can also get up through the teat, through the nipple, into the milk ducts. Cows, goats, sheep, whatever animal you prefer getting your milk from, they're not particularly picky about where they lie or sit. Goats and sheep are going to be a little bit better just because their manure is harder and it's more discreet, but cows spray, they have liquid manure, it sprays everywhere. It's really hard to contain. So you're going to have splash, and
I feel like you're trying to be so polite to the cows right now.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of cow manure, and cows are not my favorite animal.
It's fair. Oh, wow.
I know.
All right, we'll save that debate for another day.
I think it has to come to the smell. I'm from Wisconsin, and everybody sprayed raw manure on the fields, and it's just, oh.
Some people love that smell. Some people hate it. That's fair.
Yeah, so.
Okay,
but,
back to shelf life, though.
But the shelf life, when you're milking the animal, obviously if you're milking with a milker that's properly sanitized, there's less chance for things to fall in from the air or the belly of the cow. If you're not milking with a milker, if you're milking by hand, you know, anything that's on your hand, if you're not wearing gloves, is going to end up in the milk. Anything that is on the udder is potentially going to get into the milk. I mean, best practices, you clean the udder and then you wipe the udder down with some sort of mild cleaning, sanitizing agent. This is not something that people who have cows or goats for their own use necessarily always do. I mean, things change. People didn't used to wear gloves in conventional dairies back when I was a kid. They do. It's pretty common now. But you're fundamentally dealing with an animal that can have a lot of different bacteria that can make you sick living in them without making them sick. So, for instance, when we think about E. coli, the kind that causes lots of outbreaks, it's a normal inhabitant of cows. It lives in their intestines. They don't get sick. We get it. We get really sick. Campylobacter, same thing. Salmonella in adult cows, usually not going to cause major illness. Baby cows are a different story. So there's always that risk that from the udder, from straw falling on if you're using an open pail, from dust in the air, that something's going to fall in. Or just, you know, come from the skin of the udder and get in. And you have spoilage microbes, which usually don't make you sick. And you have then pathogens that don't usually cause spoilage. And the spoilage microbes present in the milk are also killed by pasteurization. So that makes the shelf life a lot longer. Hmm.
I'm glad you brought up avian flu. That was a topic I wanted to be sure we hit on today because it is going around in the U.S. right now, and it's been spreading among dairy cattle. EB, so just to be clear here, can it survive in raw milk and then be passed to humans?
It can survive in raw milk, and it is very much so a concern. How it manifests in humans, I can't speak to that as a public health expert. I'm not a medical professional with that. I'm not a doctor. But we are very concerned as public health experts with how it will make humans sick and also what could happen with what other illnesses a person may have when they consume it. How could that impact the virus? Would this create a different strain of a virus that could be contagious to humans? And there's also been cases throughout the country of other animals consuming this and dying. So there have been a series of cats across the country that have consumed contaminated raw milk with HPAI that have died. And so there is a lot of concerns with this. And what's frustrating is that even for the farmers that are doing the best job, it doesn't mean that they can keep HPAI away from their cows. So this isn't necessarily just a sanitation and like making sure that the cows are clean and like the surroundings and everything aren't contaminating the milk. This is a very different, this is not the normal pathogens that we're used to fighting. This is a whole different animal and virus that we're dealing with avian influenza impacting dairy cattle. And so this is a very, very different situation that we're dealing with in dairy. And in as far as we know in the history of the world, highly pathogenic avian influenza has never jumped to dairy cattle. And we are the only country that we know of currently that has faced this issue. So this just happened in 2024. So this is still an evolving issue that we're trying to address in this country.
In November, California regulators recalled two batches of raw milk from a dairy farm after bird flu was detected in the milk. Mm-hmm. And as you said, no human bird flu cases were detected from those batches, but officials were urging buyers not to drink it. And it hasn't been detected here in Vermont. But we did speak recently with Natalie Quitt, who's from the Department of Health. And she says that there, as you said earlier, an extra risk of bird flu when it comes to raw milk. And the greatest risk is to cats.
It's definitely recommended not to feed raw milk and raw pet food to cats, because that also is available through the mail, which is, we know we don't have it circulating like locally where, we might have dairy farms and cats roaming, but that, people might order infected products online and feed it to their cats.
Let's go to the phones here. We have Alice calling in from East Montpelier. Alice, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for the show and the conversation. I think you're doing a disservice to all of us by not emphasizing the importance of the immune system for keeping us healthy. I drink raw milk, and my friends do, and my family, and I've worked at raw dairy farms, and I've read the work of Weston Price. He wrote a book in the 1930s called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, and he started as a dentist and wondered, why are people having tooth decay? He traveled all around the world looking at societies and cultures where people had very strong, healthy teeth their whole lifetime. And then successive generations, after they started eating a modern food diet and had a lot of tooth degeneration. And it has to do with eating a healthy diet that includes raw milk, soaked beans, soaked nuts, natural fermentation, lacto-fermentation foods.
Alice, I'm just going to jump in because we're hearing some sounds behind you. It's making it a bit hard to hear you, but I do hear your point. And it actually echoes what our email writer, Will in Starksboro, said earlier. Later in his email, he said, attacking raw milk is absurd in the face of myriad challenges to basic health presented by, for example, plastic-based junk food, unsanitary public restaurant kitchens and public restrooms, and general ignorance about food and eating. Andrew, I wonder if you can address this point that Alice and Will brought up here. How risky is drinking raw milk compared to the myriad other public health concerns that we face?
Well, I think the other public health concerns that were mentioned, with the exception of restrooms and restaurants, we don't see those. It's hard to actually trace back because it's not going to show up for a while. We can trace illness to raw milk pretty fast. If most raw milk is probably going to be fine, but compared to pasteurized milk, there is about a 800 times greater risk of illness. And it's not consistent. It's not like you can say, okay, this milk has never made me sick. It will never make me sick. You could get unlucky. People have to set their own risk level. I think if you are healthy and over the age of 6 to 10, so not a small child, and under the age of 65 or 70, and you don't have an immunocompromising condition, and you're not pregnant, and you want to drink raw milk, that's your call. The people who really do need to think a little extra hard are anyone who's undergoing cancer treatment, anyone who's pregnant, parents of small children. Small children are much more likely to end up hospitalized if they get any of these bacteria from raw milk, because their immune systems are not fully developed until they're at least 6. And diarrhea and vomiting can dehydrate them and send them to hospital a lot faster. Mm. Cancer treatment, HIV, organ transplants, being on any sort of immunosuppressant drug, these all increase your risk for getting seriously ill or dying. Mm. And refrigeration won't take care of the one I worry about the most, which is listeria. And it's pretty rare in milk. But if you're pregnant and you get listeriosis, you have pretty good odds of having complications, whether that's a preterm birth, a late-term miscarriage or stillbirth, or a baby born with septicemia.
I want to add one more voice to the conversation now. Ashlyn Brissell owns Rebop Farm with her husband in Brattleboro. They sell meats and raw milk. Ashlyn, welcome.
Hi, Michaela. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. So when did you and your husband start producing and selling raw milk?
Well, we started producing, I'm going to have a hard time remembering whether it was 2014 or 2015, but we're in our 10th year of producing it together. And I had about 5 years before that of working for other people and then producing with some friends sort of under our own flag. So I've been producing raw milk for about 15 years total.
And how many cows are you milking there?
Well, right now, today, we're not milking any because we had a pretty traumatic barn collapse two weeks ago. But typically, we're milking anywhere from 5 to 10, depending on the time of year and the season.
Okay. I'm so sorry to hear about your barn.
It's totally okay. Well, it's not totally okay, but it is. The community is rallying around us. We have good plans for the future. It's just, you know, odd not to be milking for the first time in a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. And tell us a bit about how selling raw milk factors into your larger business. Like what percentage of sales does it make up for you or your income?
Yeah. So in a normal year, it's about a fifth of our total sales. And in the beginning, it was our primary product. We started on leased land with one cow selling to neighbors and used that to sort of build our business up so that we could eventually buy land and then increase our herd numbers. And there's been a slow and steady sort of growth over the last 10 years.
Hmm. EB, Rebop Farm is one of the farms that your agency works with to test their mm-hmm. milk and other products. How does that process work?
Yeah. So there's in Vermont, our legislature, they wanted a pathway for people to be able to have access to raw milk and also to try to have some protections in place for protecting public health. And so there's a two-tier system. And for Ashland and their farm, they're under the higher level, we call it a tier two system, where they can sell beyond just at their farm. They can deliver to people's homes or farmers markets, things like that, farm stands, et cetera. And so for Ashland and them, and they do a great job with everything that they do, they fall under a little bit stricter standards in that they are required to be registered. And they're part of that registration, they have to be inspected once a year. And their milk is required to be tested twice a month. And what's required to be tested, it's not pathogen testing, it's milk quality. And so we're looking at tests that show somatic cell count. It kind of reflects the quality of the milk and like the health of the cow. And then also other tests that can tell us kind of the cleanliness of the equipment and like the milk cooling and other things. The other tier, we call it a tier one, is for farms that they're not required to be registered. So some people will ask to be registered and they want to be inspected. But for others, when we see that they are selling milk, we will inspect them. So there are farms out there that are selling raw milk that we're not aware of, and they're not being inspected because there isn't a registration requirement on those. But for the ones that we know about, we do inspect them once a year, and there is no testing requirement on that milk. Mm. So, and then other things, just random requirements for both groups. The animals are required to have a rabies vaccination. That's a yearly vaccination done by a veterinarian. And the animals are required to have a test for brucellosis and TB. And so those are just things that could pass on through the milk that our legislature is trying to make sure that those things don't get passed on to people.
And you said these are state level tests.
Yes.
You just mentioned the legislature and their concerns for the people of Vermont. How much of this regulation around raw milk comes from the state level versus the federal level?
So the rules that we have in Vermont are solely from our state legislature. Raw milk is not allowed to enter interstate commerce. It can only be sold within our state, intrastate commerce. So these rules are not from the federal government. They are only from our Vermont state legislature.
Mm. Let me read a couple of emails here. Dirk writes, I drank raw milk for over 40 years living on a dairy farm. I don't ever remember getting sick from it. I will have to say, being a dairy farmer, you always have to make sure the milk is cold, and we always try to have high quality milk. And my dad and I, something my dad and I checked, if a cow was not good, that milk did not go in the tank. Jim in Vergennes writes, I go to Spain for 2 months out of the year. They don't refrigerate milk. They have their own process. Why doesn't the U.S. use their process? Andrea, I'm wondering if you can address this. They're not refrigerating their milk in Spain, apparently?
It seems, well, there's the only way that would work is if they use like ultra high temperature pasteurization, because then that will knock out all the spoilage microbes. Otherwise, if you don't pasteurize it, your milk is going to go bad pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Like, I went home to Wisconsin a year or two ago, and I came down one morning. My dad gets up really early, and the milk, pasteurized milk, was sitting on the counter, and it had been on the counter for like 2 hours. I'm like, don't you guys have issues? And they're like, oh yeah, it goes bad really fast. I'm like, well, that would be because it's sitting on the counter for 2 hours. Most things don't grow as quickly in the refrigerator. There are a few exceptions to that. So if you don't have like basically sterile milk, like ultra high temperature pasteurized milk, it is going to go bad at room temperature. Mm.
We also got an email from Kit in Burlington. Kit writes, I use raw milk from a wonderful Vermont farm, mostly to make my kefir milk and also for occasional baking and cups of coffee or tea. I'm more glad for the lack of homogenization than for the lack of pasteurization. I believe the human body can handle non-homogenized milk. Would your guests talk about the lack of homogenization as well as the lack of pasteurization? Are both equally valued within the raw milk community? Well, Ashlyn, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. The lack of homogenization in raw milk, is that something that you're thinking about?
Well, it's sort of a native property of raw milk. It takes processing to homogenize milk. We don't homogenize on my farm, so I'm not an expert in it, but my understanding is that you have to break up the fat molecule in order to get it to stay in solution instead of rising to the top like it does in cow milk. So I enjoy being able to scoop cream off of the top of my milk, but beyond that, I don't think about it much other than that it's a property of the milk. I think pasteurization is a whole different ballgame that mostly has to do with safety. So I think one is to your taste, and you can get creamline pasteurized milk. So you can have both if you prefer pasteurization, but you want a non-homogenized product. Or if you enjoy having the creaminess of homogenized milk, then like more power to you. It's just one more processing piece.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, this is really a cow-specific thing. Goat milk is naturally homogenized. It's just smaller molecules. So it's very, very rich, actually. So if you like the creaminess, and you can get pasteurized goat milk, but it is going to be a slightly different taste. Mm.
Kurt in Windsor County writes that one of their favorite things about living in Vermont is exploring the many different family dairy farms. We have the best milk in the country, Kurt writes. Ashlyn, I'm sure you would agree. Kurt also says, until recently, I was agnostic towards whether the milk was pasteurized or raw. Our family has enjoyed both. But since the spread of bird flu has arrived in our region, we have stopped consuming raw milk because we have young children. Does the state of Vermont test for bird flu at local family farms? Because I really want to get back to supporting our local dairy farmers. EB?
How much time do we have? Because I can talk about this
a lot. Unfortunately.
So right now in Vermont, we are testing under USDA requirements. We are testing all of our dairy farms that are shipping their milk that goes to pasteurization. This is part of a federal response. We are also testing our dairy farms, anyone that is shipping their milk to be processed, whether it's raw milk, cheese, or pasteurized product. And then we also have made testing available for anyone that is selling raw milk. Ashland and their farm, they were the first raw milk sellers that reached out, and they asked to be voluntarily tested. And so right now they are our only sole raw milk seller that has asked to be tested, and we are testing them. So there are other raw milk farms that also ship milk that is going to be pasteurized that are being tested as well. But Ashland's farm, they were the first ones that said, hey, like, we want to be tested and make sure that we aren't selling this and impacting people. So it's something that we can do if other farms want to be tested, but we can't mandate it because it's under a federal program. Hmm.
Well, let's get one more caller in here. We have Arthur in Brattleboro calling in. Arthur, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello there, and hi, Ashland. I'm a customer of Ashland's, and I'm also a former employee. Hmm. And I just wanted to call in and say I feel really, I feel confident drinking milk that I get from Reebok Farm, in large part because I feel like I have gotten, a sense of, from Ashland and her partner Abraham, the, like, responsibility that they have and that they take seriously for creating a safe product. I've worked both on farms that produce raw milk and that farms that don't produce raw milk. And, you know, seeing kind of the processes, it's not one is better than the other, but one is definitely a process that I trust producing raw milk, and one is a process that I wouldn't necessarily drink raw milk from another place. I also just have a quick thing that my reasoning for liking to drink milk from Reebok Farm, in a lot of ways, is not a health thing at all for me. It's more of an economic thing. I think it's a great thing that it has allowed people like Ashland to farm, within the means of the land that they have available, and be able to make enough money to keep farming in that way. So anyway, thanks a bunch for all your work, Ashland. And,
thank you, Arthur. Thanks for calling in. Ashley, it sounds like you have a tight-knit community there that buys milk and other products from your farm. And it seems like trust is such a key ingredient in raw milk.
Truly. And hi, Arthur. It's so nice to hear from you. I think that a trust between producer and consumer is so important, and particularly in raw milk. I think our sort of ethos as a producer is the idea of risk mitigation. Like, if we are selling a raw milk as a riskier food product in the world of food products, how do we mitigate the risk to the best of our ability? And we communicate that to our customers, and we try to do a lot of customer education about how to then take that milk and get it home safely and use it safely, or safe in a more safe manner. And I think that shows in our customer base, and it's so good to hear that, you know, our customers see that, feel that, and value it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ashland Bristol, for calling in. And if you're in Brattleboro, you can find Ashland and her husband's farm, Reebok Farm. Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And best of luck with the restoration of the barn as well. E.B. Flory is the Division Director of Food Safety for Vermont's Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. E.B., thanks for sharing your expertise.
Absolutely.
And Andrea Etter is an assistant professor at the University of Vermont, specializing in microbiology and food safety. Andrea, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun.